And welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 17th day of July 2012. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me today, rising from his sickbed to give us a hand, is Bob Brown. So we're very grateful for Bob Brown once again for stepping into the chair, and thanks to Ben last week who helped out. So we've got a big show today. As usual, we will be speaking with Patrick Bishop from Wollongong. Patrick is associated with the Mankind Project, and later we'll be speaking with Paul Maszewski from Men's Wellbeing. Paul is the editor of a magazine, and he's involved with the whole theme of today's show, which is that of men supporting men. So it'll be great to get some find out a little bit about what's going on in the community and what some men are doing to help other men who are maybe having a few problems or maybe just want to get the most out of their life. So it'll be great to hear from what both these two men have got to say. We also, as usual, have some great music, some selected by our guests, some by our listener. So looking forward to getting into some of those tracks. Now, before we head off with all that, we might just refer to a couple of news items. And the first news item I wanted to mention is a good news item. It's reported in the Sydney Morning Herald on the 13th of July 2012. Well, I think it's a good news item. Golf followers might disagree, but Jason Day, who was an entrant in this year's British Open golf competition, decided after the birth of his first child that it would be more appropriate for him to pull out of the British Open. He said, obviously, I'd love to be playing the British Open, but as I've said all along, family comes first, and I want to be with Ellie and Dash right now to enjoy this wonderful miracle. Day said, I will return to golf when the time is right. So it's an extraordinary new attitude that seems to be enveloping fathers these days. There's another example here reported in the Sydney Morning Herald on the same day. For those of us who have been following the Tour de France bike race, the Swiss rider Fabian Cancellara, who won the first stage and he was actually wearing the yellow jersey for the first week of the tour, he pulled out of the race to be with his expectant wife. So it just shows, I think, the priorities that men are now putting in their lives. I'm quite sure that 10, 20 years ago, very, very unlikely that these leading sportsmen would have taken that step to make sure that they were there at the time of the birth of their children. So, and I think we see it in all sports. I know it happens in rugby league, it happens in swimming, it happens all over the place. So, it's great, I think, to see that people are getting the right priorities. Now, this is an article from the Adelaide Advertiser. It's by Ali Carl, and this was in July 15th, 2012. He's saying that divorcing couples face many hurdles beyond just the breakdown of a relationship, and some of these are unfair. Have you ever promised someone, or have you heard people saying it, that if something seriously goes wrong between us, we'll never take it out on the children? Which is a good principle, and it's something you say when it's easy, but when it gets tough, it doesn't always work out that way. When you can't work it out between the parents, the worst resort happens, you go to the courts. And there was a story last week of a Brisbane father. And I found this quite extraordinary. The Brisbane father, whose access was retrospectively restricted after being labelled too much of a fun dad. This was a situation where the mother successfully argued that it wasn't fair because she was left with the drudgery of Monday to Friday with the children and it was affecting her relationship with her six-year-old girl. So what she was saying was, oh, dad gets all the fun times. He has her on the weekend. And so the Brisbane court agreed with the mother and, would you believe it, cut back the time with the father. He was only seeing the child on the weekends as it was. We hear stories like this. We hear the Disneyland dads, the dads that are only there for holidays. They're like a sort of like an uncle. Well, I think there is slowly a realisation growing that to be involved in the children's lives, the dads have to be there during the week as well. They have to get involved in the schoolwork. They have to get involved with the other parents. It's much more a full-time job than just seeing the kids for the weekends and for half the school holidays, which used to be the golden rule. And this is this led on to a discussion on the role of the family court, and he describes it as one of the most hated institutions. When it was set up back in the 1970s, that was when the Labor government came in 72. The court was set up in 75 by Lionel Murphy. It was supposed to differ from other courts in that it was supposed to care about the combatants. But flash forward 40 years or 42 years, and we find that it's an organisation thwarted by its adversarial nature, where upholding the children's best interests can sometimes mean airing and investigating malicious allegations that have no truth or footing. He describes a situation for a friend of his. This is the friend of the journalist Ali Khal, who said that after the court prescribed psychological testing and management, the father was left financially and emotionally ruined, only to be finally rubber-stamped as an engaged, loving and appropriate father. In that situation, the accuser, didn't even have to apologise for her lies. And that's the usual situation in the family court. You can say anything you like, there's no perjury. And, of course, but it still means the other person has to chase every rabbit down every hole to try and get the truth out there. In this case, it had a happy ending. The mate of the journalist was granted sole custody of his daughter. When the ex-wife who had wanted to take the child overseas came back from overseas, the father, by his own volition, went back to equal shared time with the mother because he thought that was the appropriate thing to do. So that's a happy story. Unfortunately, there are many where it goes the other way, and despite the father not having done anything wrong, despite spending all the money he's been able to save up, despite all the emotional turmoil, despite everything else, he still finishes up not being able to see his child or children. Now, this is another story here to do with a recent decision by the Federal Minister for Health, Tanya Plibersek. And in this one, it's noted that you might have seen some items in the news recently, but Australia is going to be the first country to offer young males free access to the cervical cancer vaccine Gardasil, after the federal government announced it would spend $21 million to immunise nearly 900,000 boys across 4 years. The new program, which will start next year, that's 2013, will expand the existing program that provides Gardasil to teenage girls. It'll offer the two-dose vaccine to boys aged 12 to 13, and for 2 years there will also be a catch-up program for boys in year nine. The decision has been hailed by public health and cancer experts, as well as by the vaccine's inventor, former Australian of the Year, Ian Fraser. Professor Fraser said the decision announced by the Federal Health Minister was great news and would not only further limit the spread of human papillomavirus, HPV, which causes cervical cancer in women, but also will directly benefit boys and men. Ms. Plibersek reported that 65 million doses of Gardasil have been given to women worldwide since its invention, and she said, "We know it's a safe vaccine." The Australian innovation will protect our young men and our young women from developing cancers that come from HPV, Ms. Plibersek said. With two of the four strains of HPV the vaccine protects against, they are strains 16 and 18, these two particular strains are thought to cause more than 70% of cervical cancer cases, but they are also implicated in the development of various other cancers known to affect men, which include cancers of the anus, penis, mouth and throat. The other strains, 6 and 11, are responsible for genital warts, and the rate of these has already more than halved in Australia since Gardasil was first offered free to girls and women in 2007. So there are benefits. It's been proven that there are benefits for the male population as well as the female population. HPV is, in addition to those diseases I just mentioned is also responsible for a rising number of head and neck cancers. And aggressive throat cancer has been experienced by a number of people. So, look, it's great news. Gardasil is going to get out there. It's going to help prevent these dreadful cancers from arising. And it's now not going to be restricted to just young girls. It's going to be spread to young boys as well. So, look, I think that's all really good news. So before we have a couple of more news items, we might just go to our first music track. And in keeping with the theme today of men supporting men, our first track, it's a track that probably would fit very well into the next show by Country Bob, who's sitting next to me. But this is a song by John Williamson, and it's called True Blue.
Hey, True Blue, don't say you've gone. Say you've knocked off for a smoker, and you'll be back later on. Hey, True Blue, hey, True Blue, give it to me straight. Face to face, are you really disappearing? Just another dying race. Hey, True Blue. True Blue, is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when he's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True Blue, I'm asking you. True Blue, can you bear the load? Will you tie it up with wire just to keep the show on the road? Hey, True Blue, hey, True Blue, now be fair, dinkum. Is your heart still there? If they sell us out like sponge cake, do you really care? Hey, True Blue. True Blue, is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when she's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True Blue, I'm asking you. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when he's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True Blue.
Questions that others don't dare. We dance on the
And we're back with Dads on the Air this 17th day of July 2012. And hope you enjoyed that song from John Williamson, a really great Australian song, True Blue. I know we were singing in the studio. I got Bob Brown knows every word, I think, of that song. So now just getting back to a couple of news items. We've mentioned previously on this show the battle in Brisbane where with the Italian father and the mother who misled him and the children when she brought the children back to Australia and then decided that they would not be allowed to return to their home in Italy with their father because she wanted to keep them in Australia with her family. There are four girls in this family. They're aged 15, 13, 10 and 9. And I'm pleased to report that they've just spent their first weekend alone with their Italian father since the mother brought them back here in 2010 on the pretext of that holiday. The courts have decided here in their wisdom that the mother has primary care of them until the High Court decides in August if the family must return to Italy for a custody hearing in accordance with the obligations that Australia signed up to under the Hague Convention. But while all this has been going on, there's been a bit of a Facebook war, and more than 6,600 supporters of the mother have joined a Facebook page called Kids Without Voices. And there have also been a number of people, some 400, maybe 600 people that have joined a rival called the Four Hidden Sisters page. The girl's maternal great aunt, who seems to be playing an enormous part in this whole battle, has now taken out three intervention orders against supporters of the father, alleging their comments on Facebook amount to stalking and harassment. But meanwhile, the father's camp believes a relative of the mother has misappropriated money donated to a fighting fund to set up to help the girls. In an affidavit it lodged with the family court, the Department of Communities agrees with the supporters of the father, and it has tendered emails between the mother and a supporter which refer to a relative taking money from the fund. Justice Peter Murphy has directed the Australian Federal Police to investigate these allegations. Kids Without Voices was ostensibly created by the four sisters on the May 13th so that they could, inverted commas, have a say in their future. And the father's family and friends set up their Facebook page on the 16th of May. But these pages have degenerated into forums for vituperative attacks on the estranged parents and their supporters. The site has made vile and disgusting attacks on any individual who has shown support to the father, a spokesman for the father said. Meanwhile, the mother's lawyer said she had no comment to make about anything. So we have to wait and see what happens when this matter goes to the High Court to decide whether Australia should comply with its obligations. There's no certainty about this. In fact, the High Court in similar cases has gone the wrong way and decided to walk away from these international obligations. But we can only hope that not only the law is followed, but common sense is followed when this comes up for final determination with the Italian father and his four girls. Now, there's also a story that we've caught up with from James Cook University. James Cook is the university where Dr. Greg Canning is a part-time lecturer. And Dr. Canning has taken a step on principle regarding one of his colleagues at the university, and this refers to a misandrist feminist by the name of Betty McClellan. Unfortunately, she has been described as being a man-hater for many years. She provides the ideological underpinnings for groups like SCUM, that is an acronym for Society for Cutting Up Men. And she's been making these inflammatory comments about men for quite a long time. She's been at the university for about 20-odd years. The this has been described as a brand of racism, and the question is asked, why do we tolerate the gender hatred aimed at 50% of the world's population by these lunatic females? It has been even picked up overseas. It was picked up in the UK, and the question was asked, would David Cameron speak? But the comment was made, he's probably too frightened of upsetting the sisterhood in the Houses of Parliament and Lords, and I think that's been demonstrated previously with David Cameron's outrageous comments that he makes annually just before Father's Day. But getting back to the James Cook University up in Cairns, there was there was a complaint submitted by Dr. Greg Canning. He submitted a formal complaint to the Vice-Chancellor detailing his concerns and offering to contribute to any investigation or provide further information regarding statements that had been made by Betty McClellan. The receipt of the complaint was acknowledged, but then nothing more was heard for several months. So Dr. Canning wrote again, inquiring as to the progress of the investigation. Within a couple of days, he received a notification that the university did not believe that there had been any breach of its code, and furthermore, that no action would be taken against McClellan. Dr. Canning was flabbergasted with this response, given the clear evidence of sexist bigotry that he'd put before them. And so in that situation, he felt he had no other recourse other than to resign his teaching position with the university and sever all formal ties with the James Cook University. He said this was a difficult decision, as contact with and teaching undergraduates was a much cherished and fulfilling activity. He doesn't say that this, by resigning, has made himself destitute. His university teaching role was limited and part-time. His main commitments have always been to his private practice and postgraduate education via his professional college. So he admits that such a decision would have been much more difficult if he had relied on a university job for his livelihood, and no doubt this figures in many academics tolerating or not making a fuss about these hotbeds of radical feminist bigotry. I think if any university has got a women's studies course, that is usually where you'll find this sort of bigotry going on. The good news is that Dr. Canning has received letters of support from people known and unknown to him in the local community, and there are a sample published in the Townsville Bulletin on July 14. Most importantly, he has had several phone calls from men who were previous students at James Cook University with first-hand experience of the anti-male bias in the Department of Social Work and Community Welfare. He's planning to meet up with them and discuss just as an example of the sort of thing that Miss McClellan has written. She on her RadFem Hub website, which is an article titled "The Question on Nobody's Lips," she states, "Even with all the evidence we have that something's not quite right with the male of the species, there is still impenetrable resistance to focusing on men's behaviour and asking, what is it about men?" She is described as being on the extreme side of feminism, which started out, as Dr. Canning has pointed out, in letters to the Health Minister and the Sex Discrimination Commissioner. Feminism started out as a movement of equality to bring equal rights to men and women. But even though that's largely been achieved, certainly in Australia, there's still a group of people who believe that all men are evil. And the fact that people like Ms. McClellan are teaching students is something that bothers him and is something that forced him to take this action. But since the university failed to even caution Dr. McClellan, he saw this as a reprehensible moral and ethical shortcoming. I should add, Dr. McClellan has responded. She said it was ridiculous to suggest she supported violence against men or vilified them. I don't support violence from anybody to anybody, men, women, anybody. She said, how am I vilifying anybody, really? She believed Dr. Canning was going over the top. and went and made a few personal observations. She said it speaks of a man, really, who is fairly desperate because he's not getting his own way. He's not able to silence a woman who has an opinion. So that's Dr. Betty McClellan. Just one more article here, and this is to do once again with child kidnapping, child abduction, and this refers to the situation in Thailand. Under Thai family law, may come into play when a child is abducted from a foreign country and taken to Thailand, or when a child is taken from Thailand to a foreign country, or when a child is abducted by a parent within Thailand. If a person in Thailand finds themselves in this situation, they can get a family attorney to file a police report with the relevant embassy in Thailand, or file a formal request pursuant to the Hague Treaty. There may also be criminal charges involved if there's a criminal complaint is also required. Thailand has formally acceded to the Hague Convention. However, at this time, the proper procedures for acting upon the convention have not been codified into Thai law. This means that the convention falls into an ambiguous area of Thailand law. In certain cases of child abduction originating in Thailand, where the child has been taken to a different country, that is a Hague Convention country, action may be filed through the relevant government authorities of the country. Where the child has been abducted and taken to Thailand, the remedy has to still go through the Thai family court and cases need to be examined individually. It's not perfect, but Thailand is only a recent signatory to the Hague Convention, and I suppose it should be noted that it is one of the few Asian countries so far to sign the convention. So let's hope that there is a movement towards the signing of the Hague Convention, which is not the solve of all problems, but at least it's a start in getting some fairness and justice in this area where one parent takes it under their own control to abduct a child and deny the child access to the other parent. So we might just go to another short music break and we'll be back with our first guest. So this is another theme song. It's Walk Like a Man by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. This is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and it is Tuesday the 17th of July 2012. And we welcome to the show today Patrick Bishop. Patrick is a retired teacher, a worker with street people. He's now an elder and a trainer and administrator with the Mankind Project, or MKP. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning.
And it's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Now, Patrick, you've been involved with the Mankind Project for over 10 years now.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, how did you first become involved with the program?
Bill, I was a member of a thing here in Sydney called the Sydney Men's Festival, and two of the fellas came along one year. I'd known them both before, and I said, "What's happened to you two?" And they said, "What do you mean?" So I said, "There's something more gathered about you. You're more sort of present." And they said, "Well, we did this weekend." And I thought, well, if something's happened to them which has made them, in a sense, better men, then I want a piece of that pie too. So I went and did the New Warrior Training Adventure Weekend, as it's called, at a place called Eagle Heights in southeast Queensland in June 2002.
And that was the start.
That was the start for me, and since then I've become more and more involved with it. I'm pulling out now as I'm getting older and losing energy, but by the same token I still hold the principles that they got at that time, and I've worked a lot for it, both here in Australia and overseas.
Yes, and it is an international organisation, isn't it?
It is. It began in the United States about 28 years ago and developed from an original thing called the Wild Man Weekend. That's based on Robert Bly's stuff about Iron John, the Wild Man.
Yes.
And it developed into a Mankind Project, a New Warrior Training Weekend. Currently is in 8 different countries or regions throughout the world, and we hope expanding. There are about between 45 and 50,000 men have been through this weekend. Not all of them sort of stay with the program, and that's fair enough too. It's whatever helps a man at the place where he's at in his life. But that's where it's at the moment.
And is it aimed at men with particular problems, or is it, can anyone get something out of it, do you think?
I believe that anyone can get something out of it. I think that I need to say that we usually don't take a fella under the age of 18 years for insurance purposes and for safety purposes. There's no upper limit. I trained in a weekend in Western Australia weekend before last, and our oldest man there was 79 years of age. Now, that's pretty good. And he went through everything with everybody else. He was wonderful. If there's something not working in your life, we may help you to look at that. If your life just needs toning up, as it were, we can help you look at that.
So is it? Does it involve physical activities as well as...
There's a certain amount of physical stuff on the weekend. We take very great care about safety, by the way, and I need to say a word about that. Safety is paramount with us. Both physical and psychological and emotional safety is absolutely paramount with us over the weekend. We do take people to places, not physically. The physical things are pretty easy. But we do put some challenges there. We do some other challenges to men, take them to deep places in their lives. But as I say, safety is always paramount with us, and we're very careful about not pushing a man beyond where he is capable of going and where he wants to lead us.
Yes, so I imagine there are a few tears come out at various stages of a weekend like that.
One of the things that guys say at the end of a weekend is, "I never thought I would be able to cry in front of other men and trust them." And that often happens. Yeah, it often happens. Men crying or grieving for something in their past, or just sometimes just in joy because of great things that are happening in them. So yes, there are tears there. Lots of laughter too, by the way.
Well, that's good to hear, is it? Look, I think there's a definite need for that. I mean, I'm thinking particularly of men who have just been through the family court, been through a divorce. They often feel totally alone. If they can find out about an organisation such as yours, it would offer that hope, I suspect.
Bill, that's one of the things that I personally believe. This is not a sort of a statement on behalf of the whole project. It's just my personal belief is that the clientele that we can work with, that we're absolutely geared towards, are those fellas, say, between 25 and 35. The first time I find that I'm not Mr. Superman, you know, I become bankrupt, or I find I've got an addiction to drugs or alcohol or sex or whatever it is, or I've separated from my partner and I don't have access to the kids, or something's happened whereby my manhood is challenged to the depths. And that's the place where I can really enter in on this program. It's available to men below that age and above that, obviously, but that particular group, it can do wonders for in getting a man to say, I am of great value in this world. I can be a real man.
Yes. Now, you've got a history of working with street people. Do they participate in these weekends as well?
I didn't quite catch that.
Yes, you've got a history of working with street people. Yes. Do they become involved in this project as well?
I have actually introduced two or three of these fellas to a group that a regular group that we have, which meets after that weekend. I'll say a word about that in a second. I haven't had any people who have actually sort of come from my experience from the streets, people who've been homeless and so on. We do, however, have had men who have been on the streets, men who are, drug addicts in the longer term. We ask them to be clean for at least between 3 and 6 months beforehand. If they've got alcohol problems, we try and make sure that they're clean before they come to the weekend. I see a word there. We do, after the weekend, we offer to men if they want something like, I'll use the figure, the weekend gives me a toolbox, and afterwards an integration group gives me the tools that I can use to become the man I have the potential to be. And that weekly gathering, people come to it for 3 months or so, or they come for a couple of years or whatever. Some don't come at all. That's all right. That's their business. But we offer them something to ground and really develop what they learn on the weekend.
And that's what do you think is the main thing they learn? A new sense of pride in themselves as being a human being, as being a male?
Yeah, I'd say pride, but also humility. Mm-hmm. And just sheer gratitude. And when I say gratitude, I think I need to expand that just for a moment. We are non-denominational. We've got no belief in... no belief. We encourage everybody's belief, whether they believe in God or the great world spirit, or if they're Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Hindu. It doesn't matter. It's becoming a better man where I am in my life. And learning to do that with sheer gratitude for the fact that I am a man and capable of being a great man.
And perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the group. How many would normally be in a typical weekend group?
We like to have our weekends with about 24 men going through the weekend. We will take as many as 40, but it's a huge burden on the staff once it gets over, say, 32. It's a very big burden. By the way, our staff is always more than one-on-one. It's usually about 1.5 times the numbers in terms of staff to what we call initiates for the weekend. And the staff, most of the staff, there are only about 4 members of the staff who don't, most of them pay a fee for coming on the weekend. The project is, of course, a non-profit organisation.
So even the staff they're obviously still getting something out of it, even though they've been through the weekend as an initiate. They're now they're still getting things out of it.
Most certainly. The last weekend I did, as I say, was in Perth 2 weeks ago. That was my 74th, and I'm still learning. But I still got a huge amount out of the weekend itself. I was there, as you used the word in introducing me, an elder. I look after the, so to speak, the cares of the older men who would be doing the weekend and who would be helping the younger men on the weekend. And that's my sort of official role in that place. And that's why what I was doing over in Perth on this weekend. But I still learn a huge amount out of it each time.
Yeah, And it's you're very inclusive, I think. I mean, there are no, you mentioned there are no religious barriers, but I think you also mentioned you welcome gay men and you know, all the different types of men, fat, thin, old, young,
straight, gay, yeah. Bisexual, trans. Well, we haven't. I can't say transgender at the moment. We welcome transgender people. I haven't met up with a transgender man on the weekends that I've done. People from any different creed or whatever. We also will take people with quite serious physical disabilities.
Mm.
I know in one weekend in Sydney here, we had a man who was paraplegic. He was in a wheelchair the whole weekend, and he did a great weekend. I could go on with a couple of those things about physical disabilities, but we love to have men, wherever they are, becoming the men that they are capable of being.
Yes, and look, I imagine the able-bodied people would also learn a lot from the people with a disability.
Do they ever? And I might say that the fellas who on that weekend when I'm talking about with this man in the wheelchair, his fellow initiates were absolutely fabulous. They formed teams to work with him and ensure that he got all the benefits that they were getting from the weekend. It was just great to see.
Mm.
And that, by the way, is one of the things that is very important, is that when these men come, say 24 of them come to do a weekend, they learn to work as a team and to support one another. So that if a guy is going through difficulties, the others will be there for him. And he, in turn, will support others in all of their difficulties. They say at the end of it, at the end of each training, we have what we call a homecoming or a graduation. And at that, their wives and families and partners and so on are more than welcome to come along and celebrate these men who've done the weekend. It's usually a couple of days after the weekend. And I've heard Phyllis say there, I never thought that I would have friends like this, men I've never met before in my life, who suddenly have assisted me in becoming an even better man and whom I want to support in that work. Time.
Yes. Because there's something called a shadow, I think, that people have.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. We say that shadows are those things we hide, repress, or deny. You know, I may be... a shadow thing is some area that I don't want to know about, or in fact I may not even know about myself, and I certainly don't want you to know about. You know those fellas who wear sandwich boards walking along the street?
Yes.
We say that the shadows that I have in my life are the ones on the front of the sandwich board, and I can see them and you can see them. The ones behind that but still in front of me on the reverse side are the ones that I know about and you don't know about, and I'm not going to let you see. You know, I might not think I'm good enough, or I might not be, in my eyes, a real man, or I might have failed or something in life. On the back of the sand, on my back, are the shadows that you can see and I can't see, and then underneath that on the back are the ones that neither you nor I can see. And so the working with shadows, the bringing them into the light, I just take one example there, which is, I believe, it's, for me personally, has been great. Shame in any form, you know, men take on shame in various different ways. And if I bring that out into the open and say, I'm ashamed of, you know, I'm too old or I'm not good enough or that or the other thing, and I bring that out into the light, somehow the shame burns away. And I stand in strongly in having faced that shadow.
Mm.
We do actually, we don't deny our shadows. We simply say, let's see if we can bring them to the surface a bit and have a look at them, have the courage to face them and to work with them creatively.
Yes, so that helps to get rid of that something gnawing away inside you, is to actually get it out in the open and discuss it with
it
people
does.
You trust.
Mm. Yeah, very much so.
Mm. And I imagine all sorts of things get produced in that session.
Yeah, and thank you for just saying that, because I think it's very important to recognise that confidentiality is also a very big value with us. When I talk about the weekend or whatever happens to me, I can talk about what I got out of it, but I may not, and I sign a document to this extent, that I will not speak of another man's business. Mm. It's not fair to anybody else, and it also undermines trust. So that confidentiality is very important for us on the weekends. Yes. We do a total of, I think it's something like 48 to 50 different processes or activities on the weekend, and we say, oh, they're supposedly secret. They're not secret at all. You can find them on our website, which, by the way, is Mankind Project or mkpau.org. Yes. The processes that we do, the only thing that we don't tell people about is the order that they're coming in. Most of the things that we do on the weekend, I had met up with me in men's business long before I ever got to the weekend.
Mm. Yes, well, there is a perception in the community of this type of organisation. I mean, I suppose one thing might be you're all regarded as tree huggers and dancing around in the nude. Is that something that's, exaggerated or not true at all?
Exaggerated. There's a certain amount of controlled nudity on a weekend for particular processes that we do, and I need to say also that any man is free to pass on any activity on the weekend. We make that very clear in the first session, and there's no shame in passing on a weekend. We just respect the man for where he is and what he is able to do or get himself to do. There's a charge that's sometimes made against the Mankind Project is that it's a cult. And when we're smiling about these things, we say, if we were a cult, we'd be better organised than we are. But as well as that, there's no money in it. As I say, it's a not-for-profit organisation. And
you don't have a charismatic leader, I presume?
No, we don't. I mean, men do lead the weekends, and they are men of considerable charism in that sense of gift. By the way, they must do a whole series of weekends and go through a huge certification process before we will let them work as leaders on a weekend. They can be men who are greatly gifted, but they're not charismatic leaders, no. There's a very strong process, and I love it to bits, a process of what we call peer supervision. Mm-hmm. And there's a real honesty in that. I noticed this when I was in Perth just last weekend. Something happened there, and one of the leaders said something to me, and I thought, Patrick, that's the right thing for you to hear at this particular moment. And it was good for me. It was a learning process. So the charismatic leader's not there. What else do I need to say about that?
We're speaking with Patrick Bishop, who's an elder with the Mankind Project, or MKP. And could you just remind us again of that website, Patrick?
You can find it under simply Mankind Project with Google, or mkpau.org.
Great. Now, one of the criticisms of the group is that it sometimes ruins marriages. It goes the other way. I mean, I guess sometimes it strengthens. Sometimes people come to a realization. Is that what you find?
Yeah. And I hear that criticism magnificently, because it can be that a guy gets so interested or so committed that he is neglecting his partner, and that's not fair to that relationship, which has to be primary. You know, they speak of golf widows. Well, there are MKP widows too. And one of the things that we are very strong about is that the women need to be on side with where we are, and they need to have everything available to a knowledge of what we're about with them. It was one of the things that they do in Brisbane. I don't know whether they do it in Western Australia, which is the other big centre. Here in Sydney, we've got a smaller group, but in Brisbane, they have a group whereby one of the women talks to the other women whose husbands or partners are on the weekend, and they have a little sort of just a phone gathering or a cup of tea or whatever together while the fellas are on the weekend, so those women don't feel lost. And then at the homecoming, on the few nights after the weekend, the women come along, and what I've heard from women there is, you gave me back the man I fell in love with, or you know, my husband's come home and we've talked at great length and we're happy to speak more deeply and more honestly with one another. A guy can get out of balance. Of course he can. But hopefully what we're on about is helping him and his partner to make their relationship even better.
Yes, and the group you mentioned about the women, but in fact it's only men, isn't it, that get involved in the project?
This particular one is, yes. Mm. The Mankind Project is simply for men. There is a sister organisation called Woman Within. Now, it's not very strong in Australia. In fact, I think they've had one of their weekends up in Queensland, and they're going to have another one in Western Australia in October, I think it is. The notification of these things, by the way, we will keep on our website. Women's events like that, as well as men's, because we want to ensure that, you know, there's an equality and a parallel development for people, available to people. That Woman Within is not strong in Australia. It is stronger in the UK and in the United States than it is here.
Now, you've mentioned that you have men coming to you and they've been through some sort of trauma or they're going through a difficult stage. Does it also work, say, for preventive things? I mean, you know, if you can see a bad period coming up, someone maybe, you know, beginnings of cancer or someone in the family, something like that. Do you find it gives people strength in those situations as well?
What I've seen, Bill, over the years is that not only the fellas with whom I do the weekend, but also others, because we've got access to one another's contact details. We either form a relationship or a friendship with people. And what I've seen is that when a man is, just to take that example, he's diagnosed with some form of cancer, that other fellas will, as it were, rally around. They won't push themselves on him, but they will make sure that he knows that support is available. And through that integration group, that regular integration or I group, he's got resources there that he can call on if he wants at any point.
Mm. Yeah, and that must be a great comfort.
Well, I did notice we had a fella here in Sydney. He actually died of cancer about 2 or 3 years ago, and the support that was available to him over a long period was enormous. By the same token, I might tell you, he came along to a couple of our I group meetings, and we were so deeply enriched by the strength of this man as he was facing up to the cancer. So, you know, he gives as well as gets in that situation.
Yes.
That was quite marvellous. I recall that with great delight and warmth, that particular one.
Now, Patrick, I just wanted to mention some of your upcoming events. You've got one coming up in New South Wales, I believe.
We've got a training. I came on this morning, I looked at this. We've got a training in Billingen, just near Coffs Harbour. August 25, that's a weekend. There's one in Perth in October 20, and there's one in Queensland, November 3. Those are the only ones we've got scheduled for the rest of this year.
Okay, so, and if people want to get involved, they can just go to that website which we've mentioned?
Go to that website and there's information on all of that stuff there. The other side of it also is that if they want, they can always contact local people, and there are on the website there are local contacts given.
So they could talk to these local people and find out a bit more than we've talked about this morning and just see if it's for them.
And wherever those integration or I groups are available, we encourage men, if they're interested at all and they're available, to go along to them. Like, you know, I just take the one that I've been a part of for quite a long while. There's one in Enmore in Sydney. Meets every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. A man, I still get quite a lot of inquiries coming to me, and I'll say, do you live in Sydney? Can you come along? We'd love to welcome you there. And if a fella likes what he sees there, what we do, then he might enrol for the New Warrior Training Adventure later.
I think all of us men could get a lot out of this and reveal some things about ourselves that we really need to face up to. It's a great program from what I've heard of it, and Look, I'm sure we could find out a lot more given a bit more time. But, Patrick, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So I just wanted to mention your website once again. If people want to find out more, they could they can Google MKP or they can go to the Mankind Project, and you'll find out about the weekends and about the group. And it might just have the answer to a lot of men's lives, I suspect.
It will certainly help people on the way.
So, Patrick, I think I heard you say earlier you're about to retire from the group, so, look, we can wish you all the very best.
I'm not retiring from the group. I'm retiring from very active participation.
Okay.
I'm going to sit and smile and watch the others working.
That's a great way to be.
Bill, thank you so much. It's been lovely talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Patrick Bishop from MKP. And, Patrick, you've picked a song for us?
I did. I got the games people play.
It's a great song.
I'm doing that because a lot of the games we play are games we play with ourselves. And this particular movement, this Mankind Project, caused me to be honest with myself.
It's very appropriate. So I can hear Joe South warming up in the background. So, Patrick Bishop, once again, thanks very much for being on the program.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
To say now, they never say what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da 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 da. Talk about you and me and the games people play now. Whoa, we make one another. And we'll say goodbye. Cross our hearts and we'll hope to die. Let the other one be blamed. Whoa, but neither one will ever give in. So we gaze at an ape again, thinking about the things that might have been. And it's a dirty rotten shame. Whoa, la da 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 da.
And we're back with Dad's on the Air this 17th of July 2012. And it's a delight now to welcome our next guest, Paul Maszczewski, who's a journalist and photographer, an executive and editor of the Mentor magazine for men's well-being. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Oh, it's great to have you on the program.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Paul, you've previously been on the show. It seemed like an annual event. I think you're August 2010, May 2011, and here we are back again. So, men's well-being, I wonder if you could tell us a bit about men's well-being and how you became involved in it.
Sure. Men's well-being was started, I guess, about a bit over 15 years ago. There are a few men around up in Queensland here on the Sunshine Coast sort of involved in men's work, to realise that there were not a lot of government resources or organised resources to handle the issues that the men were facing. So they decided, well, let's do something about it ourselves. And they formed Men's Wellbeing and started off as the Sunshine Coast Men's Group. And sort of expanded since then, and it's become quite a strong organisation now, purely voluntary. We're all self-funded, and we've grown now to the stage where we have 5 men's weekend gatherings a year, various parts of the country, 3 of them in Queensland, 1 about to happen down in Melbourne, and another one in New South Wales. We also run structured men's groups called Common Ground, which is a 9-week facilitated group that meets for 3 hours every week and covers a broad range of topics that are quite fundamental to men's development, men's healing, men's well-being.
And then you bring them all together with the Mentor magazine. Is that what happens?
We have our own magazine, which is published twice a year. Again, totally self-funded. And basically that gives a voice for men, which often the mainstream media or other avenues simply do not speak to. That magazine provides men with an opportunity to talk about what's going on in their lives, to send in articles of interest to men's issues. We have pages of photos from our different gatherings. That creates a bit of a focal point. That magazine will be going online as well in the next couple of months. But probably the mainstay of our organisation is the Common Ground Men's Groups. Our mission statement for men's well-being is that we support the developing the well-being of men to foster healthy relationships, families and communities. Basically, healthy men means just that, healthy families, healthy communities, and our community benefits as a whole from having men who are together, more aware of themselves and their issues, and more able to step into their own space and their own world.
Yes, a 9-week facilitated program, you mentioned the Common Ground Men's Groups. I suppose that's a big commitment. Do men sort of hesitate about signing up for this, or how do you get them interested and involved?
They've become quite popular. A lot of men will actually travel, drive an hour or so to get to their weekly group meeting. Probably the normal thing with some men, there might be a little bit of hesitancy at the start of, what am I going to encounter? A lot of men get prodded along by the women in their lives. They say, maybe this is something you need to do. We usually find that once men come along for the first, that we have like an introductory evening where we talk about Common Ground and explain what happens with it. Once men experience that, they're normally quite keen to get involved. It's one of those processes where it's interesting. There was a study done recently which showed that one of the biggest issues with men's health was actually stress and probably the lack of any sort of support network or friends they can confide in. But what normally happens, men come along to a Common Ground group and suddenly they find that there's normal, everyday men just like themselves who've been going through exactly the same issues in life, whether it's with parenting their children, whether it's with their relationships, whether it's finding a deeper sense of purpose in their work or in the world, resolving issues with their own father, their own fathering, and all of a sudden becomes apparent that there's a common journey that a lot of men tend to cope with in life. And there's a difference between coping with those issues and being very present with them and rising above them and becoming a, I guess, a much more capable and more effective man in life, and I guess a happier, a more balanced man as well, which, again, contributes to our family relationships and happy individuals and happy communities.
Yes, I'm sure there are those individual issues, the masculinity, relationships, fathering, sex, intimacy, those type of issues. And then you've got the larger issues of the role of men in our community, which is seems to be changing, doesn't it?
Oh, very much so. And it's there again, it's not something the major media addresses very well, and probably not something our governments address very well either. We're still very sadly lacking in government programs to assist men, even though most governments tend to acknowledge that men suffer far greater health issues than women with mortality and poor health and whatnot. We keep getting promises from various governments to address those issues, but nothing ever seems to happen. So I think the big thing we've learned as men, and basically we need to do it ourselves instead of waiting for governments.
Yes, well, there's also, on the other side of the coin, is that the government seems to be stepping into the roles that were typically the men, you know, insofar as, say, security and being the bread provider and a lot of those typically father-type roles. The state is very willing to jump in and do it instead these days.
That's correct. I think a lot of men who are sort of brought up under that perception. I know when I was growing up, I grew up around a lot of very strong men. The men were the breadwinners, even though my mother was a professional and probably earned just as much as my father back in those days. But that traditional role of men as the breadwinners and the health of the head of the household is probably no longer there. And so I think it's a matter of men sorting out individually what they feel their role is in the world. One of the, it's interesting, one of the big areas of discussion in the media starting to come in now is the effects we're starting to see with our young people of the lack of fathering in their lives. But a few politicians say over the last decade, I guess, that we have the most underfathered generation in Australian history. We're starting to see that now, and a lot of behavioural problems with our young people, both the girls as well as the boys. And a lot of people now are saying, like, there's the lack of that balance of the masculine, the strong masculine in our children's lives to create that balance. And I think men are starting to learn what fits for them and where they fit within that role now themselves.
Yes, well, there are so many fatherless families, and I think even when the father is there, they see this, they perceive this change in their roles, and that it might make them perhaps withdraw into themselves rather than being an active contributor.
Exactly. We have some good programs around for that now. We have a youth mentoring program as well called Rites of Passage.
Yes.
Which is basically where the older men help the younger men or the boys to develop into healthy manhood. There's not a lot of role models in our general society for that. And we have our own elders circle as well that's been meeting for a couple of years now. A fairly strong elders circle. They're springing up all around the country, actually. There's quite a resurgence in the men's eldership movement. So men are starting to step back into that role of realizing not just for themselves, but very much our children and younger generations need strong, healthy, aware men in their lives. That doesn't mean men have to be perfect either. I think most of us are still on the learning journey. Personal development is pretty much a lifelong process, I think. But the fact of simply being present and being real in our children's lives and even if we don't actually have family, that being a positive role model in society for the youth can have a tremendous benefit, I think.
Yes, look, I'm very interested in this rites of passage because in our society there's no, well, you might say in the Jewish religion they have a bar mitzvah, but generally speaking there's no clear-cut transition from being a youth to being a man. Now, you come from New Zealand. I don't know whether the Maoris have some sort of rites of passage that you could draw on in our community, do you think?
The Maori in New Zealand have still have a very strong culture over there. They have very strong elder groups, and their whole community is still has a lot of that cultural tradition. I think they're pretty much suffering from pretty much the same as the rest of the world, that some of those traditions aren't quite as strong as they used to be. The more younger generations grow up and have more freedom. Mm. But some of them are very much... I was back there a few months ago and watching on television the one of the inter-school cultural festivals, the competition with all the different Maori groups from the different schools compete with Maori culture. And it was quite astounding to see these young Maori boys and girls speaking their language, Maori language, very, very fluently. Mm. And taking great pride in their cultural traditions and the dances, the young boys doing the haka and the girls doing the poi dances and whatnot. Mm. The tradition is very much alive, and there's a very deep culture of respect for that and honour. And it's quite interesting talking to some of those young people and just feeling the sense of pride in their culture and their tradition. Mm. I think that's probably something we're very sadly lacking in Western society, that we can look to those indigenous cultures for.
Yes. So in the rites of passage that you conduct, what do you focus on in those courses?
Yeah, we have a facility called The Rock, which is a beautiful retreat space right out near Somerset Dam. It's sort of up in the hills. We use that for men's retreats, but we also use that for a youth camp called Rites of Passage. And that's like a program where the young boys quite often sort of go out with their fathers and spend some days camping out in the bush. They sort of they learn the stories, their fathers tell the stories of what they encountered when they were growing up, what happened when they first encountered cars and alcohol and relationships and all those sort of worldly things we normally encounter on life's journey. The older men talk about how they dealt with all those issues, and the younger boys get to tell their stories of what they're working through as well, and actually be heard, which is quite a powerful thing in our society, the young men to be acknowledged and heard. After that process, they come back and they're sort of welcomed back into the community by their mothers and by the women, and they're sort of welcomed back as men. Mm. The women sort of hand them over to the men as boys to start with, and at the process at the end, they get welcomed back into the community as men, which is a very powerful acknowledgement.
Mm.
And it gives them some guideline of how to step into a path of responsible manhood.
Mm. I think that's great because there's sometimes a criticism made that men are just boys that have grown taller. You know, there's no clear transition, you know, when you do things as a boy and when you do things as a man. And yet, in fact, you know, I think sometimes it takes a man to have a child before he really turns into a man. But what you're doing is introducing it a lot earlier and what the expectations are and what you can do as a man that perhaps you couldn't do as a boy.
Yeah, that's a very interesting analogy. Certainly, there are some men who still struggle. If they haven't had that initiation into manhood themselves in their own life, or if they haven't had a strong role model as a father, a capable father, quite often there isn't that path to be able to see ahead how to develop into responsible manhood. And we see some men getting involved issues with drinking or doing still what we would call boyish behaviour. Mm. It's interesting, having been involved in the mainstream media for 33 years as well, I think there's a lot of generalisation around that. We hear that term very often, oh, men still act like boys.
Mm.
I see it very much as a people issue rather than a gender one. there's still a lot of women sort of on that path, acting like girls as well, sort of caught up in all sorts of different things that women can get caught up in. So women can go along that path as well. A lot of women need to develop from the girl into the mature woman also.
Yes.
But in our culture, we tend to view anything dysfunctional as coming from men. Instead of looking at the men who are actually leading the way, there's quite a strong community of men worldwide now who are more conscious, more aware, and sort of leading the way into a more responsible masculine identity, if you will. Some great groups around. Interesting hearing Patrick talking about the Mankind Project earlier.
Yes.
There's some fabulous men's work around now. All different levels. We have quite a few overseas as well. We have some happening in New Zealand. There's quite a worldwide movement now towards conscious men's work. But we still, in general society, we still tend to look at men's dysfunctionality rather than what they're stepping into, which I think is a little bit unfortunate. But things take a while to change in culture sometimes.
Yes, I think your patron is, in fact, Steve Bidoff, who speaks about this topic quite often, and he's been a guest on this program previously. But it's inspiring once men can get this idea in their head of what they can do and what they could be doing.
That's correct. Yeah, Steve is our patron. Wonderful guy, Steve. He's I find him very grounded and very very comprehensive about being aware of what's actually happening with modern men. But I think the more we become aware that there is quite a revolution happening amongst modern men, and there is something for men to get involved in on whatever level they feel they want to be involved in, it's a matter of what do we focus on. Do we focus on dysfunctional men still acting like boys, or do we place our attention on who's leading the way, and the fact that there is a new role model emerging for men's masculinity? And I think creating a safe space where men can explore their own idea of what it is to be a man for them, rather than anyone dictating this is what modern manhood should be. Our organisation tends to create more space in our gatherings where men can explore that for themselves, find out what fits for them. A very safe and supportive space, and we have a lot of fun as well.
Yes, I notice it particularly with in fathering that you very often now see fathers out with their kids, playing with their kids, that maybe a generation ago might have been seen as more for the mother. But that whole fathering role and attitude seems to have changed fairly quickly.
It has, very quickly. In some ways I see it as a very positive thing. A lot of women have much more financial independence now, that more involvement in the workforce, which in some ways can free up a little bit of time and space for men to be more involved with their children. It was interesting, about a year or two back, one of our major newspapers in Queensland here actually ran a survey for Father's Day that showed that 84% of families, the male was still the major breadwinner. So basically we still rely on men to be the major breadwinner in the family. But at the same time, men come in for a lot of criticism for not spending enough time with their children.
Mm.
And a lot of companies are only just starting to recognize that maybe we should allow a bit of space for men and fathering as well. I think we just had... an agreement with our government up here recently for 2 weeks of paid paternity leave if a man's partner has a child. The men actually qualify now for 2 weeks paid paternity leave, where previously we didn't have those provisions.
Mm.
Men have still been very tied down by their work commitments. And I think that whole changing landscape is hopefully giving committed fathers a bit more time and space to spend with their children.
Yes.
There's always that criticism too about some men just aren't interested in being with their children, so that's another whole issue again with the new family laws and whatnot. There's been a lot of contention around the new family laws, which a lot of people say they tend to restrict men's involvement with their families more. So men are facing a huge number of issues, even in the area of fathering and being involved in family, both with their work commitments and with the whole changing landscape of family law.
Yes, perhaps we should be talking now about supermen. We've talked about the superwomen who try and have a career and family at the same time. Well, it's getting to the stage where men have to are being expected to do the same thing as well.
Oh, look, I've seen a lot of, like we always talk about, women being able to be multifaceted and multitasking. I've seen a huge number of men highly capable and able to do that themselves as well. As a very close friend of mine who sort of who raised two fantastic children by himself as a single father and had a very accomplished career as well. His children are now sort of grown up and have families of their own. He's very much involved in their lives, and as a single father, he's done an incredible job and quite effortlessly as well.
Mm.
Very organised man. I think we don't acknowledge fathering enough. The capable men who are doing a good job as fathers and as parents, either single fathers or in relationship. I always find it interesting observing the mainstream media and seeing the amount of coverage they give to Mother's Day as opposed to Father's Day.
Yes. Well,
Father's Day gets a bit of a token mention, but very rarely gets the mention that Mother's Day gets, and I think that's a sad thing.
Yes, sometimes it even goes the other way. I've noticed that people like David Cameron and President Obama seem to choose Father's Day as a day to get in some criticism of, you know, deadbeat dads or whatever else they want to criticise about males, which is very unfortunate timing.
Yes, there again, I think it gets into, like, if men like that on a high profile actually used Father's Day to acknowledge the fathers who are doing a good job, we would make much more progress in the world, much bigger progress. You know, if we highlight the good role models instead of pointing out what men are doing wrong, it becomes very unhealthy when we constantly focus on what men are perceived to be doing wrong. It simply highlights that perception and creates a lot of stereotypes and makes it a whole lot harder for the men who are doing a good job. They're then faced with having to overcome those stereotypes. But if we had more men in high-profile positions, or women as well, who are actually acknowledging and celebrating the fathers who are doing a good job, we would make much quicker progress in our culture as a whole. That would be provide much much more realistic role models for our young people as well.
Yes, and we're speaking with Paul Muszewski. Paul, you've got the Mentor magazine. For people that are interested in hearing all these opinions about topical issues and would like to share an experience, maybe they don't see themselves as writers, but I'm sure they'd be welcome to make a contribution. How can they get in touch with you?
Yes, by all means. We have our website, which is www.menswellbeing.org. Men's Wellbeing is all one word.
Mm-hmm.
Menswellbeing.org. And on the listings, right down the left, right on the left side there, there's a listing of all the different programs we run and all the different activities we're involved in. On the left down there, there's a link for Mentor Magazine, which gives the contact for that. The next issue will probably be coming out within the next month, so it's a very timely if any men have issues or positive stories or whatever they'd like to contribute. This is normally for our community of men with men's well-being. We have a mailing list of about 1,200 these days and probably about an active membership of about 600 men, growing all the time. But we certainly welcome contributions on men's issues from any men, really.
That's great. That's Mentor Magazine. Now, Paul, we have run out of time. I wonder if you could just tell us about the song you've chosen for us. It's another great song, and we'll get them warming up in a minute.
Was that In the Living Years?
The Living Years is by Mike and the Mechanics. So, Paul, thank you once again for being on the program, and look, we wish you all the best with Mentor Magazine and all the great work you're doing in the community.
Thanks for having us on, Bill.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
generation blames the one before, and all of their frustrations come beating on your door. I know that I'm a prisoner to all my father held so dear. I know that I'm a hostage to all his hopes and fears. I just wish I could have told him in the living years. Oh, crumpled bits of paper filled with imperfect thoughts, still to conversations. I'm afraid that's all we've got. You say you just don't see it. He says it's perfect sense. You just can't get agreement in this present tense. We all talk a different language, talking in defense.
Say it loud.
Say it loud.
It's too late.
It's too late.
When
welcome back to Dad's on the Air for the last time today. We'd like to thank our special guests today. We had Patrick Bishop speaking to us from Wollongong about the Mankind Project, and we went up to the Gold Coast to speak to Paul Machewski about men's well-being and the magazine he has, the editor of, he's the editor of Mentor magazine for men's well-being. So it's been great to speak to those two today. Next week we're going to, next time we're back, it'll be, we'll be talking about some fathers' rights activism, but that's something we're putting together at the moment, so we look forward to doing that. In the meantime, that's it for Dad's on the Air for this week. We wish you all the best. Don't forget you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, where you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And once again, a big thank you to Bob Brown, who, as I said, got off his sickbed to come and help us today. It's much, very much appreciated. So until next time, that's it for Dad's on the Air.